Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I, Charles IV, oh, is it the third? Bloody
hell. We will strive for the detoxification of the
Let me put it to you.
Can't just grow, conquer.
Yes, you
if
can.
You win by one, oh, you've won.
The phone went over the side.
It is time to draw a line.
I just think everyone should be sure.
What the fuck is going on?
Hello, I'm Mark Steele. Welcome to my podcast, where each week I ask the question that all the world is asking, what the fuck is going on?
What the fuck is going on?
Well, my lovely guest on the podcast last week was Caroline Quentin. And given that we're of a certain age, we just couldn't stop chatting. And so, as the world of modern technology is such as it is, we've just put it all out as part of a show. And you can listen to it if you wish, the whole thing. If you find it tedious, you can turn it off. And you're perfectly within your rights to do that. You know, it wouldn't be if I was in my rightful place as benign dictator. The benign bit would be gone by now. And I would have soldiers checking to see who had turned it off halfway through. And depending on how long you listened to it before it went off, that would determine your punishment. But I'm not in that position. So you can just do whatever you want with it. So here it is, Caroline Quincy. She's lovely.
What the fuck is going on?
Now, every week I say what is obvious, that we all know this. You can't work out what the fuck is going on without expert advice. And then I introduce someone and they're not experts and I have to pretend they are. But not this week. We're going to find out one of the many things that she is an expert on. Caroline Quentin.
Hey, I am an expert on so many things. It's terrifying. I'm looking forward to you delving down into my expertise barrel.
Oh, so many things. We could go anywhere. Aeronautical engineering.
Yeah. I don't do as much as I used to because I'm too busy, doing gardening.
Well, the history of the Incas.
Yeah.
World number three in the tennis rankings recently.
Yeah. I know, it's incredible. It's what's interesting is I've had such a rich and varied life and I've gleaned so much about so many things, and yet oddly this morning I can't remember anything at all.
No. Well, I like to think that that's probably our audience. A podcast done by people our age. There's no point in us going, here's a load of things that we think that you might be interested in. We want to be in touch with our audience by going, who was that? No. Oh, Caroline, who was the?
Oh, God. I mean, they
fucking bloke. Who was it?
We've got the right people for that. When we saw them recently for lunch, I mean, it was the whole meal consisted of us going, do you remember that really funny bloke who used to play the, what was the club?
Yes.
What was it, him?
With the clarinet.
Was it an oboe?
No, the oboe, that was Mr.
That
was Mr. Spunktastic and his
and his bubbles.
And his bubbles, yeah. They come out of an oboe. I think
we're the right people to be doing this because I don't even know my own name most mornings.
Well, because terrible, because because I've had sort of various health issues in recent months. Every now and again I forget something and then I think, oh no, is that has the cancer gone to the bit that controls me? And then I think, no, it was about 5 years since I could happily remember more than three things at once.
I think we all think, oh, I can't remember that because of my age, my illness, my bladder leakage, my you know, my chest infection, my, you know, my family drama, whatever. And the truth of the matter is, we're all just living life. And it's true of everybody now. The trouble is, we're so overstimulated. That's, I do think there's an issue with that. I think, you know, wherever you go, there's a screen pointing at you. There's, you know, people say to you, oh, have you seen that new series? And you think, oh, about 35 different series I'm into, books I'm meant to be reading, series I'm meant to be watching, you know, languages I'm meant to be doing, yoga I should be, you know, I mean, it's the end.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to get all them confused. No, there's a new thing where Martin Scorsese has written this new thing up where you stretch, where you have to do a sort of downward dog pose.
Yeah.
And is that it? And it's the new. Oh, I'm trying to think of some new. What's a new series?
You mean Martin Scorsese, the film director? No, Martin Scorsese.
No, the yoga instructor. Which one's the yoga instructor?
You're joking.
What was the good? What was Goodfellas? Was that yoga or was that a television series where they had to go around and buy a house in Italy?
Oh.
You were probably in it.
I think I might have been, but I don't recall it now. I think I played an Italian mobster and I was in the position of a dog. Is that right?
That'd be it.
That was me.
You've been in everything.
I know you were
in Midsummer Murders, weren't you?
I know I was. I've been knocking around in this industry for 4.5 million years, and I'd never worked with or met Adrian Edmondson, and then I got cast as his wife, and it was really nice. I'd never met him, and I've always thought, oh, I'd like, I wonder what he's like. I bet he's really. And then I got cast as Mrs. Woman in this in a Midsummer Murders, and I spent, you know, like a couple of weeks in a obviously a big posh country house, because that's, you know, mandatory.
Yeah, because that's where all modern murders take place.
Exactly, with Adrian Emerson. So that was really fun. That was directed by our old friend Audrey Cook as well.
Oh, how brilliant.
Yeah.
How brilliant. Well, that must be brilliant to get if you're an actor and you're at a certain point where you just sort of, it's almost like meeting up with old mates and you think, oh, what am I in now? Oh, it's Casualty. Which one of us has broken a spine? And which one of us is the surgeon?
But it is like that. At the moment, I suddenly realised the other day, I went to see a play at the National the other night. It's a really, really good play, actually. It's called Till the Stars Come Down. And if you get a chance to go and see it, go and see it. It's one of the best bit of writing. It's by Bess Steele. Really wonderful. I'm trying to remember where she's from, actually. Sorry, I digress. Anyway, I went to see it. And I suddenly thought, oh, I know them. I've worked with them. I know I work with their son. I, you know, their daughter's an up and coming designer at, you know, the world becomes much, much smaller as you get older, because of course, you know, I have worked with a lot of people.
Well, once you can, I remember seeing an Icelandic comic who was, and I'm fascinated by Iceland. I'm not quite sure why. And he had a line I remember, I thought it was really funny, when he said, the dramas we have, they just don't work in Iceland, because Iceland's so small and everybody knows the people. So you're watching an Icelandic detective story and you think, well, that detective, I wouldn't trust him to solve a murder. I lent him a tenner once and I didn't see him for 5 months.
That is Midsummer. Basically, Iceland is Midsummer. Everybody's the detective and everybody gets murdered and you run out of people and you start reusing the same actors again. Have you noticed that in other things?
Yeah, to be honest, Caroline, all those sorts of murder programs, I just can't get over it. I know you're supposed to. I can't get over the implausibility of the fact that in this village where the last murder probably took place as part of the English Civil War, there are in fact 11 murders a week, and also that when the murder happens, 3 minutes later the husband of the woman murdered is actually perfectly all right and goes, well, the thing is, detective, I can't understand why she went out on a Friday, because she and I and the detectives are saying things like, there's something that I don't quite understand that doesn't quite add up. She said that she was growing basil, but you wouldn't normally grow basil until the third week of May. And so, and in fact, the truth of the police when they come around to any crime is the fucking dead person could be in front of them with the person with a knife in their hand. And they go, well, we don't normally tend to find whoever the culprit is in these things. So you can, I'll give you a crime number so you can claim on the insurance. And the person could be going, but I am the murderer. Yeah, well,
that's
they all say that.
And like about it, you see, those of us that like those programs, they're all the things we like. They're massively comforting, and they require you do have to switch off that critical part of your brain, obviously, for the half an hour, 40 minutes it's on. But there's a great comfort in just, you know, in a world that is cruel and fast moving and terrifying, and you know. My daughter lives in central London, and she literally had to go through, the blue and white cordon, you know, murder thing to get to her front door the other day. You know, when that's in the real world where that's happening, it's quite nice to see somebody saying, "What is that shining underneath that chair? It's the blade." You know, it's like I quite like that. I like, you know.
I'd like to do one.
Yeah.
What do you reckon on this?
Yeah.
I'd like to do a spin-off of Midsummer Murders called Midwicket Murders.
Yeah.
With about a cricketing detective, and called the Midwicket Murders, and every week he's just about to play for his village side, you know, and then someone says, "Sir, there's been a murder at the vicarage, but I'm due to go into bat in 40 minutes. I'm afraid it's important, sir." Oh, and then there's
in his whites? Is he always in his whites?
Yeah.
That's his shtick, is that he's always in his whites, and he's always, you know, maybe is it kind of one of those things where, I mean, do you love cricket? Is that your thing?
Yeah.
Oh, right. I don't know much about cricket. In fact, the only cricket I've ever watched is those shit games that you used to play with the comics.
Yeah, really
awful.
Well, yeah, we'll do one. We'll do that. We can sell this off, and we can send this off and pitch it. So you're the wife.
I do the teas. I'm the lady that does the teas.
Oh, okay.
They still do cricket teas. Is that still a thing?
Yeah. Oh, it's absolutely a central part.
But also, what's brilliant about me is that in my previous life, I worked in forensics, so I know a lot about things. I know a lot about blood stains. So I do the teas, but I also have this massive skill set from my previous life. And so, even though I'm annoying to everybody, because you know, I'm just sort of wittery woman in pavilion, they always have to come to me in the end and go, "All right, tell us what was that blood stain?"
Okay.
Yeah.
All right then.
Yeah.
Mrs. Prendergast. That looks like an absolutely lovely sponge cake. Did you make it yourself?
I did, my dear. I got it out of the oven this morning, so it's still warm. And I hope you enjoy it. I think it's going to be what's that? What's that noise? Something's happened on the pitch.
Well, something's usually happened. Knowing how luck, it's the opening bat at LBW in the first over. But more to the point, Mrs. Prendergast, I think the wicketkeeper from North Holmwood, second 11, is really going to enjoy some of the marzipan on that cake.
I hope he does. I think I knew him when he was a boy, you know. He's a strange kid, always rather odd, always hanging around the big house looking through windows at things he shouldn't.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's our opening scene. It's rough. It's rough.
Then we discover a murder. Then I come back to you.
Yeah.
Because there's something. Oh, there was just something that's been troubling me, Mrs. Prendergast.
Yes, my dear.
Old Tubby Watkins, who's got an average of 24 this season, going in bat at number four. He said that for the first time as he can remember, his egg and cress sandwich had some rather substandard cress that didn't reach the crusts. Do you know anything about that?
Do you know, my dear, it's odd that you should mention that, because those sandwiches also had a rather gritty texture. I was concerned about it, and it was only when Hillary from the corner shop went into a dead faint that I realised something was up. I don't want to say broken glass to you, ground up glass. I don't want to, but I fear I may have to.
Well, I was going to ask you, Mrs. Prendergast, because the other thing that I found, which is quite unusual for one of our second 11 matches, was a severed head in the fridge.
Oh, I wondered what I'd done with that. I feel so foolish now. I'm an absolute idiot. I said to Simon, "What did I do with that head?" And he said, The last time I saw you, you had a string shopping bag and there was something bouncing about in it. And I think maybe it was that I must have put it in there. I have no idea whose head that is, my dear.
Mm. Right. Well, now it's time for the adverts. And then you have a worried look.
They'll be doing stair lifts. They'll be selling us mobility scooters. with a really downward inflection.
I don't know if I've ever mentioned this before on this podcast, but this is a little cricket story. You don't need a great deal of cricket knowledge to necessarily appreciate. So I was playing in this match. Yeah. I was out, not very happy. The other team had an umpire. So each team provides an umpire, and you have to rely on the fact that you're not sort of, you don't cheat and stuff, you know, you're fair. So this other bloke, usually everyone's friendly, but this bloke was as grumpy a bloke as you could ever say. Grumpy, about 70, had this everything about scowl, scowl, scowl. And just after I was out, the person who'd taken my place hit the ball really hard straight into the umpire's leg, the grumpy umpire's leg, and this bloke absolutely howled. It was like a hyena. Oh, it was a terrible noise, but quite amusing. And about three people had to hobble him off, and he came and sat next to me, and we had to get a replacement umpire. And this bloke, and he was grumpy at start with. He put his leg up on the table, and he rolled his trouser leg up, and there was a big lump that you could see the sort of cricket ball seam almost. So I went indoors to the sort of equivalent of Mrs. Prendergast, right? And there was a woman there who was making the teas, and there was a bar there and everything. And I said, have you got any ice? And she just totally ignored me. I said, can you give some ice? And you could hear, oh, outside. And she just ignored me. She said, no. And I could see a big ice bucket there. And I said, there's an ice bucket there. She says, no ice in it. I said, well, anything, you know, frozen peas, anything? Nope. Oh, and I said, oh, we just need the ice. The ball in his leg is in terrible pain. And she went, oh, God's sake. And she went over to the ice bucket. It was full of ice. And she got a tea towel and gave us some ice. I was like, what was her problem? And she thrust it in my hand, really angry. And she went, he's my ex-husband. I've no bloody sympathy.
Good. You see, that's so satisfying, isn't it? He's a grumpy old shit and he got his comeuppance, and she had the power to deny him any sort of relief. That's so crazy. She probably had waited about 40 years for that moment, but she wasn't going to let you take it away from her too easily. I love that. No ice, nothing for him.
Now, we've got important things to discuss, haven't we? First of all, I mean, because, you know, given that I think even people who listen to this podcast and it's got my name on it, probably halfway through go, who's that bloke? But I would imagine. So I'm Mark Steele. And Caroline, what have you been in a part? Well, obviously, maybe I'm Badly and Jonathan Creek and...
Yeah, Blue Murder and Midsummer Murders and, oh, my God, I'm Dancing on the Edge. It depends. I've done lots.
Oh, you went up and down India, didn't you?
Yeah, been round India, been round the national parks, been round your house, been round. I've done lots of sort of presenting and what would people know me from? Most people probably know me from Men Behaving Badly, but a lot of, and a whole other tranche of people who didn't really watch that. Watched Jonathan Creek, which I did for years, and then latterly, I'm in a big series for Sky called Lazarus, which is a big science fiction. So I've got I've suddenly meeting people who are interested in science fiction. Which, by the way,
I've not seen that. That's better.
Yeah, it's on Sky. It's really amazing, actually. It's written by Joe Barton, and it's about a group of people that work for a secret organisation that have the power to turn back time. And I'm the boss, and which is ludicrous in itself. I'm suddenly meeting science fiction people who really know about it and really love it and really like that series. So that's been a nice change for me, A, to play someone with authority, and B, to someone who knows about black holes and about how to turn back time. Yeah.
I think you ooze authority, and I think black holes was always one of your strong points.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's finally been recognised by Sky Television. So, yeah, Lazarus is what I've done for the last couple of years and still doing theatre. And, you know, I was at the National. I very proudly got nominated.
You did a play with your daughter, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I did a play at the Jermyn Street Theatre with my daughter about Emma Hamilton, the a mistress of Nelson. Yeah, I played.
I can't imagine. I think that's very bad parenting if your sons and daughters end up doing the same sort of entertainment path as yourself.
It's awful.
I can't imagine that.
It's really difficult because you're on stage and I was playing fat old Emma and she was playing young pretty Emma and it was like, yeah, no, this is ouchy on so many levels. But it was actually, my boy who's at Leeds studying politics and religion is not obviously going, not interested in show business at all. And when it was suggested to him, as he's definitely the funniest and cleverest of all of us, we said, were you interested in showbiz? Maybe. I thought he might be a stand-up, actually. That was what I was thinking. He's
all right.
He's very funny. He just said, don't be ridiculous. I want to make a living. I think he's going to do politics. He's not silly.
Hey, welcome to IKEA, where even this desk is circular.
Huh. How so? Looks pretty rectangular to me.
It's because we're always looking to repair, reuse, and relove our products, like buying back your IKEA items for store credit. Or shop our as-is section for great deals. You can even order free spare parts. Get on the circular path for a more sustainable future.
Still a rectangle.
Get started at IKEA-USA.com/circular. Visit IKEA-USA.com/circular for as-is information and buyback and resale terms and conditions. Spare parts not available for all products.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
This episode is brought to you by the Weather Channel. It's suggested that brands avoid using sound effects in podcast ads. And remember to speak in a chill tone. Well, here's a suggestion for everyday life. Tap into the Weather Channel app. It's loaded with insights that help you manage your allergies, breathe easy, and
use your outside voice.
What in the weather are you waiting for? Be a force of nature with the Weather Channel app.
My son, the moment where I thought my son probably would go into stand-up, there were two little moments. One was he was about eight, and the draw for the World Cup was on, and by then he was already a really big fan of football, and I said, do you want to come watch the draw for the World Cup, see who England get? And he went, no. I said, why not? He said, don't make any difference. He said, even if we get drawn against Easter Island, we'd lose to the statues. And he was eight, and I thought, oh, all right, here we go.
It's funny, you do know, don't you? Like my daughter Rose, she was five when she did a school play, and she walked on, and my mum was still alive at the time. She walked on, and there was a really bad first opening gag. She was playing David who killed Goliath, and she did her first gag. It got a massive laugh, and my mother turned to me and went, "Oh God, we've got another one."
It's trouble, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think if someone's around that world where, so it, obviously because Elliot had been around a world where people talk in comic language, so someone said to me mistakenly, they said, oh, my friend had a terrible time, got stuck on the motorway and had to call the RSC, right? And I said, oh, they called the RSC. When they got there, did they say, ah, yonder problem be that thine spark plug, it produceth not the you know, and all that, like you would do.
Yeah.
Indeed, methinks that if exhaust pipe doth from, you know, for, so all of that.
Yeah.
And then Elliot was about 14 at the time, and I said, say the same thing to Elliot, and I bet he does the same thing, because that's just the way that comic mind would work.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course he did. As soon as he said, oh, yeah, and he had to call the RSC, and he was going, oh, the RSC, did they come round and go, methinks, me lord, that the fuel pipe provideth not the combustion, that exactly, because of course you would.
Because in a way, people always say about my daughter, why has she gone in the same thing? And it's partly that inherited sort of, you know, that being around it, you know, enjoying it, like, you know, because I mean, you know, there's no doubt about it, you know, being in show business in any form or another is really good fun. You know, it just is good fun. It's much better than hanging about in an office or anything like that. I mean, it has obviously, it's, you know, there's a downside, which is half the time you won't be working, and, you know, the other half, you know, you'll be away from home or whatever that might be. But there's such a joy sitting in a, well, you know, I mean, I remember the old days at the Comedy Store, and I remember I used to do the Comedy Store Players, the improv stuff there, and just hanging out with comics and actors and all that is, you know, of course they want to do it. It's delicious. It's funny. It's enjoyable, yeah. You know.
And it's chaotic, and it's, yeah. And it's, and also in your 20s. I mean, I spent a lot of my 20s sort of revolving around the Comedy Store. And it was wild, and it'd end at 2 a.m, and then we'd go to the snooker club,
yes.
and get a beer till 5 a.m, and that was your life and stuff. That wasn't sort of apart from, that was your working life.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Like just a couple of years before that, when I was working in this office at London Transport, and this is the moment where I just thought, I can't, I'm just not capable of being here, was these the very sweet people, Bob and Connie, and they worked behind me, but they were both sort of, my memory of them is that they were about 80, but they were probably 20 years younger than I am now. And they would say, Connie would go, oh, Bob, well, last night the phone rang and I looked at Ted and he looked at me and we looked at the clock and it was 8:45 and we said, well, who on earth's calling at this time of night? And oh, my goodness, don't call it 8:45. And I was thinking, really, at 2:45, I was in my squat where a Satanist was going berserk with an axe. And I.
Well, that was a quiet night.
And it was just.
But it was. I mean, I don't know what it's like now out there in the world of comedy and stuff like that. I mean, I met you. I mean, I knew you around those times, but I think I have to say this now publicly. It's Valentine's Day today. It's Valentine's Day, and you were my big crush. I remember my
friend, oh, for fuck's sake, why didn't you tell me?
Well, you just don't, do you? You don't do that. But you were my big crush, and I went back to my friend Caroline Gruber, and I was sharing a flat in Edinburgh, and I said, where have you been? She said, oh, I've been out, you know, with is it Chris Lynham and people like that? And she said, Mark Steele was there. And I said, oh, my God, the devilishly handsome Mark
Steele. Is that what you said?
I did. And it's, and forevermore, you have now, for the last 40 years, whatever, you've always been, to me and my friend Caroline Gruber, you have always been the devilishly handsome Mark Steele.
Mm.
And I loved you. And I just, you know what it's like. You
think, what, 40 years wasted?
I know. Listen, it's tragic.
That's like some really sad novel, E.M. Forster or some sad...
Yeah, yeah. It's all being revealed now, too late, when life has, you know, what is it? Remains of the Day. It's like that.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Remains of the Day. I'm Anthony Hopkins in that, aren't I?
Yeah, 100%. I know it was, but it was, it's what I also really like about being lucky enough to have lived, you know, long life.
Oh, sorry, before you just say that, you would, oh, imagine the life you'd have had. This last 6 months, for example, you'd have been going backwards and forwards to UCLH to take me to radiotherapy.
With your lack of saliva.
Yeah.
Oh, Mark.
Oh, yeah, go on.
I'm thinking about it now, and it's made it even more painful that it didn't happen. So I love UCLH. It's one of the great hospitals. I know you've had, I mean, your health's been pretty bad, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's not been its best. They go, there's a sort of funny thing that people say that, and I know they'll be very kind, and they go, well, how are you? You know, just, and then it's very hard not to go, well, I'm all right apart from the cancer. And then, but the thing is, the people in the hospital say it. So I'm there. I've not just sort of gone in as a, you know, like someone doing a Christmas television thing. Hi, I'm here at UCLH and let's go around the wards. I'm there because I'm there for an appointment to do with this condition. And they go, and how are you today? And I'm all right apart from the cancer.
But actually,
I might not have cancer now. I mean, it's well, I probably haven't. It's gone now. They've zapped it all out, and I feel
not. Yeah, I felt brilliant. I'll ask you this quickly. You might not want to talk about this endlessly, but I'm just really fascinated as to how did you know that you had it?
Because the hospital, the moment I found out was when there's two phases, and I think everyone I've spoken to with this particular ailment will say something similar. There's the point up until which you know you have cancer. That's chaos and quite frightening, and things get lost and forms get lost and everything seems to be chaos. And I went to one scan and they said, we filled in your name and address, and they'd actually filled in Elliot, my son's details. And I said, this is Elliot. And they went, all right. And I said, did you not think when it says date of birth, 1996? I'm very flattered.
Man. You're a good looking man.
I'm definitely handsome as I am.
Yeah.
It was quite a stretch to think I'm 27. All right. Everything was chaos. They lost the biopsy, everything. They lost it. And in fact, I said, I've written a thing. So I said, I think probably it's because they outsourced the delivery and they'd given it to Deliveroo. And some poor sod who put my biopsy cancerous cells on their burrito.
Is it gluten free?
Yeah.
I'll eat it anyway.
All of that.
Yeah.
And then one day, this sort of woman pretty much at reception who said, well, you need to come in for another biopsy because we lost the first one. We need to see what sort of cancer you've got. And I said, what sort of? I didn't know I got cancer. Well, of course you have, she said. And that was how I found out. That was how they gently broke it to me.
Blimey.
But then once they know that you've got it, they're astonishingly magnificent. I could not fault a single moment of them for the last 4 or 5 months. They've been astonishing, really. And now it's sort of all right, really. I don't know. They've got to test me and that, but I think it's probably all right. But I feel fine. I feel good as gold now.
Do you?
So I feel a bit guilty when people go, oh dear, don't lift that and I'll get it for you.
Just say, yes, I'm not marvellous today, dear.
I'm fine. I've got no saliva. This is where we come in, isn't it? I've got no saliva glands. They've been battered. So with no saliva, so to eat anything, like a cornflake, if I ate a cornflake, I would then have to have about half a pint of water to wash it down. You know?
Oh, Mark, that's not nice.
No.
So are you eating anything?
Yeah. I had a kebab yesterday, but it took me about 7 hours. Yeah.
It's not funny, but somehow
it is funny.
Somehow it's because they're always really horrible when they're cold. So actually, yeah. But tasty, I suppose. It's the flavour you're.
Well, like. My taste buds are mangled. They're all over the place.
Oh, my God.
I'm like a. So I'd no idea. I'm just sort of getting the hang of it now. But like an apple might taste like fairy liquid, and then a carrot might taste like. A glass of Tizer. There's just knowing. I'm like a little walking surrealist form of living.
That's so extraordinary. And do they think, is that going to get better? Will your carrots taste
It'll get better.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll get better, but I don't know how much better. So there might still be a point, even a year or two down the line, where suddenly I sort of have I have some John West tinned salmon and my body is telling me that it's a box of Cocoa Pops. I don't know.
That's so funny. I don't know why that's because it's such a personal trauma. It's like no one else has any idea of what you're going. That is life, isn't it? It's all. No one knows what each. Individuals go through that people could be watching you and they'd have no idea of what you're tasting. Perception of the world will alter so it's not really not funny. My friend.
Yeah. Well, I might on it, but conversely, I might sit there chewing a ball of wool and pick up what the fuck are you doing? And I go, this is like Dover sole with a slice of lemon.
Much, much cheaper. It's awful, really. It's awful. I do hope it does get better.
It's not awful. It's quite funny.
Oh, bless your heart. And your salivary glands will come back into play, we hope.
Well, we have to hope so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to hope so. But who'd have thought, yeah. I was and the mucus, this mucus was just, that was in the bad days of, you know, a month ago. I just, somehow it's connected to the mucus. So I just couldn't stop producing mucus.
Right, okay, let's stop this right now because I'm feeling really sick.
Yeah, sorry. I wrote an article for the Daily Mail. They wanted me to write an article about how my experience would be different, similar or different from... No, well, about the, how my experience would be similar or different from that of the His Majesty.
Oh.
And I said, so the early stages of it, where you're ringing the hospital and trying to get through and all that, there's never likely to be a point where, there you go, BBC goes, and breaking news, I'm being told that His Majesty is currently number 9 in the queue. He's being held in the queue. He's pressed 1 and then 3 and then 2, 4. He was mistakenly put through to the maternity ward. Then he was cut off. Then he rang back again.
To the moon. That's their background music. Listening to that awful music.
Yeah. But
after that.
So then I wrote a bit about, but then, king or not, it'll still have to go through this sort of thing, depending on what sort of where the cancer is and so on. And then I wrote a description of what it was like, the mucus, and I was saying the coffee and that never ends. And I was saying it's industrial amounts, a bit like an oil field, a bit like the start of there will be blood.
The treatment. That's a reaction to the treatment, is it?
That's a reaction to the treatment. That's not the cancer. So it just won't stop and it's all night and all that. And I was trying to be funny about it.
Yeah.
And the bloke who the Mirror rang me back and he went, oh my God, this is horrible. I was supposed to be funny. He went, funny, it's horrible. Readers will just be going, oh my God.
We can't print this. This is unspeakable.
The Mirror's in enough trouble as it is. But this will do far more damage than Harry saying we've hacked his phone.
Oh my God. Oh God, you've hacked up. Oh my God. Oh God.
Now, I'm going to get some water and then we've got to talk about something very important.
All right. I'm on my own now. I can say whatever I like now, can't I? Because Mark's not there. What I will say as I'm on my own, he's going to get some water, is that whilst I'm on my own, I'm just telling the listeners something about me. I've just noticed that you and I in this picture, I never realised quite how alike our noses are. My nose is getting much, much bigger as I get older. And I think our noses are quite similar.
Well, I was adopted, so maybe we're brother and sister, in which case it's probably just as well that you didn't tell me in that day.
It was so interesting. Yes, maybe we are related. It's so interesting. That story is absolutely incredible, and you tell it brilliantly. Anyone who hasn't heard that, do you think everyone's heard that? Is it a radio series you did?
It's an audio book now. There's about 8 or 9 hours of it that you can...
Yeah, people should listen to it because it is absolutely, A, hilarious, funny, moving, brilliant, but it's such a great story.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. What's it called?
Who do I think I am?
Yeah, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. If you haven't heard it, people listening to this, do listen to that. It's fantastic.
But now we must talk about matters horticultural because you have a book out.
I do. It's called Drawn to the Garden, and I've illustrated it and written it. And I thought, because I've been a keen gardener all my life, really. And I've also drawn and painted all my life. And so during COVID, I didn't have anywhere to show off. So I started doing an Instagram account called CQ Gardens. And I started to talk to other gardeners and post about gardening and all that kind of stuff and little bits of drawing and painting. Anyway, it went really well. It was amazing. It was like there was a whole group of people out there who don't really have much interest in telly, but really are interested in gardening. And I suddenly found a whole group of people I could talk to. And I've written a book and illustrated a book called Drawn to the Garden, which I think it's today. Today or tomorrow it comes out anyway. That's been a whole new really, really lovely thing.
Well, I can tell you that it works because we're by about page 6 and I'm someone who's never, not only am I someone who's not probably the first person to watch gardening programs, but I have a unique ability when it comes to horticulture in that I can kill anything. I don't know how I do it. I go, there's a lovely, lovely shop at the top of the hill here, and they a plant shop. Not a posh one at all, in fact. This really nice Jamaican man sort of in there, and he says, I say, I want something that is impossible to kill. And he'll go, well, this one, you don't do anything. You just water it once a month. Don't overwater it. Put it in the corner. Put it by some light. It just absolutely sorts itself out. That's perfect for you. And 6 weeks later, I go back in. I go, it's dead, mate. Not a fucking leaf left.
Well, that's really hard because people keep saying to me, I kill everything. I'm no good with plants. And I always say, no, there will be something. There will be something that you can grow. And you've made me rather doubt that premise that actually.
Yeah. But having said that, by about page 6 of your book, I was thinking, oh, this looks delightful. I really should sort of engage in this a little bit more and put a bit of effort.
Give it a go. Sprinkle some seeds onto some compost on your window. So particularly, actually, if you're feeling a bit crap, and right. I think, I know you're very kind of, being stoic about it, but I mean, there must be times when you think, God, I feel dreadful. You could actually, maybe one of your tiny nibbles could be a little bit of something you've grown, like a little bit of basil or kale.
Oh, yeah, wouldn't that be good?
Well, they're so tasty. I don't know what they'd taste of to you, obviously.
Yes, exactly. I could grow a courgette and go,
beef dumpling. You could grow something, and actually just the act of sprinkling a few seeds and watching them grow is so brilliant when you're feeling low, I think.
I love that you mentioned the blotting paper, because I remember trying to do that at school.
Yeah. I think I don't know how old you are, but my generation everything was blotting paper. Blotting paper was very much part. Pink blotting paper was very much part of my world when I was growing up. We used it because we used to use ink pens. So blotting paper was used for growing cress seeds. It was used for ink. It was probably
toilet paper, probably.
Definitely, really absorbant. I think there was a lot. We did a lot of growing. I don't know if they still do it in primary schools, but we grew things. We grew hyacinths. You put them on 2 cocktail sticks and hang them over water, and then a hyacinth would come. It was magical, actually. It really was magical.
There's something you wrote there that I thought was really, I thought, oh, that's brilliant. And it's an obvious thing, but something I don't necessarily always think of, that with gardening, there's something innately optimistic about it because it's for the future. So it's you're sort of creating something that is only going to come to fruition at a point in the future.
Yeah, I think
I suppose you could say that.
We are. I mean, in the book, I think I say something like, every seed is basically a hopeful gesture. Everything, because you put it into a little dark patch of earth and you are inherently kind of optimistic because, you almost are certain that some little green shoot, bless you obviously, and you kill it immediately by being near it, but a little green shoot will appear, and there is something so joyful about that and hopeful, and also there's if you fail, it's not the end of the world, because a packet of seeds will probably cost you about £1.49 and you get about 100 seeds. So even if one of those seeds comes up, I think that's a great investment. I really would encourage people to do it. I think it's so good for one.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, File a claim right on the State Farm mobile app and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Yeah, it sounds I think my problem is just that having to, I'd forget to go back and do the routine things.
Yeah, just what water. You know,
yeah, because you need to sort of keep going back every, it's a thing for me, a task that is the most difficult to accomplish is one where every day I've got to spend 30 seconds on it. That to me, because I'd just forget.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Well, so, okay, I'm just wondering if you could tie it in with something else. Like you could say, okay, I've cleaned my teeth. Yeah. Or I've done something you do every day. I don't know what you do every day, but something that takes you a short amount of time to do every day.
And I forget these. So I'm holding up a bottle of 40-sip drink here, which is what, until about the last week when I can start to sort of eat again, I've been relying on putting these in a little tube into my stomach. And there's been days where I've thought, oh, Christ, I forget to water myself.
Yeah, you're not a born gardener, definitely. If you can't, remember to put some fluid into your own body, I'm not hopeful about some lettuce seeds. I'm really not. On the other hand, you could, if you, those two thoughts, if you could, if that neural pathway could be linked, you could make that, I will feed myself and I will water my seeds. If that neural pathway connects, your whole life might improve dramatically.
The next thing, I've got prize winning rhododendrons.
I'm sorry to hear that. It's bad enough having cancer.
What a great line that would have been in 1969, wouldn't it? Let's do that again, right? But now it's Saturday night. So you ask if I've been gardening.
How are you, Mark? You've been gardening?
I have. I've got prize-winning rhododendrons.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. It's bad enough you've had the cancer. Yumpty dumpty 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 da 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 da. I've written us a theme tune there. Never mind picketing detective.
I've had terrible trouble extracting me azaleas.
I can see that from here. Jazz is up. Oh, make us happy.
So Phil Clark told me, right? Yeah. Phil Clark at the time, I think, was the commissioning editor for comedy at Channel 4.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've come across him.
Yeah. Phil.
So, and a lovely man, and he was a really splendid chap. And he got into a bit of gardening, and he was out doing pruning something, and he caught his hand on a really big, grimy thorn. And about 20, he was wearing this sort of old gardener's smock, he said, and he didn't have his glasses on because he was out gardening. And then after about half an hour, this thorn, a big blister and the stuff had come up. So he went down to the doctors. Well, he went down to the chemists, and they gave him a thing to sign that they'd, you know, they was giving him some cream. And he had this old gardening smock on that was covered in bits of grass and mud, and he didn't have his glasses on. So they gave him this sort of, they said, oh, you've got to sign this. And they gave him the prescription. And he said, and because I didn't have my glasses, I looked at it for about a minute, and I was trying to work out where I was supposed to sign it. And I had this gardener smock. And he said, and the woman went, oh, don't worry, Mr. Clark, I'll sign it yourself if you can't write. Because there was something about the image of him with this sort of, you know, this sort of, you must have thought he was like, oh, I never know to write. I do so like, no, I don't really remember begonias. And he was like commissioning editor for Channel 4 comedy at the time. Don't worry, Mr. Clark. Anyway, the point is that it's all part of feeling zen and at one with the world.
It is. It's good for you. If you can't, I always think, you know, because I've suffered from all sorts of kind of depression and stuff in my time. And I think, you know, I still find the very best thing for, you know, I've tried, you know, medication and stuff like that. And it just flattened me out so completely that I felt kind of almost nothing. And so actually I find the best thing for me to do is to get outside, be in nature, listen to the birds, plant something, do, you know, be involved with the natural world. That's it, that it helps me. And I think it helps a lot of people, actually. You know, people that are in touch with me, I've got followers in all over the world. I mean, I talk to people in America, in Canada, in New Zealand, in Ireland. I've got, people, gardeners really love talking about gardening. I mean, I understand this podcast is not about gardening, so I'm not going to do that now. But honestly, if you were a gardener, we could probably talk until the sun sets about gardening, because it is so fascinating and so good for us. And we are quite evangelical about it. And I think it's rescued me. It's rescued me from lots of sort of times of real low mood. You know, it really has helped.
Well, here is where the sort of gardening world, and probably a lot of people that listen to this podcast, where the lines would cross for everyone, is that, well, there is one obvious one, is that the most famous allotment owner of recent years was Jeremy Corbyn.
Oh, yes. Oh, God, yes, of course. Yeah. So actually, have you had him on?
I did.
On this?
No. If he could come on, the thing I would like to ask him is this. So I read about this in Owen Jones's book. That there's an account, I can't remember who it was from, but one of his sort of allies in the Labour Party at the time, who said that during one of the shadow cabinet meetings, somebody had said, oh, it's the Her Majesty's birthday, and it is tradition, protocol, that the opposition gives her a present every year. So he come in to the next shadow cabinet meeting and they went, oh, have you got the present? And they were discussing whatever else was going on. Mm. Have you got a present? And he said, yeah, I've got some jam from my allotment. I've made some jam.
Ooh, lovely.
From the allotment, and I'm going to give that to Her Majesty. And it was in a jar that he'd sort of even done the little label himself, like people do, you know, put the label Queen, you know, Majesty. And then he got called out and he had to go and they went, oh, God, well, I suppose we better give this to the Queen. And then Emily Thornberry or one of the others went, well, at least let's put it in a better jar, because this is some old sort of Kenko coffee jar or something. So we'll put it in a proper jar. And and they said that she opened the jar and it was all mouldy, the top of the jam. We can't give her that. The Daily Mail will say he's been trying to kill the Queen.
He hadn't sterilised his jar properly, had he?
Oh, that's probably it. Is that it?
It is that, yeah. If you don't sterilise, they go mouldy very, very quickly. Either that or it was an absolute deliberate attempt to take one spoonful of jam at a time.
Yeah. To undermine the monarchy by making a game.
It was rather bitter.
I think you should get Jeremy Corbyn on this programme. I do.
They talk about the allotments. Well, actually, he'd be more with you. He'd be big on it, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would. He'd love it.
But I think that I can see how the whole world of allotments, the world of allotments, let's say, that's quite a social and political issue, isn't it? Because...
No, 100%. 100% it is. The right to be an allotmenteer is an ancient right, actually. And people nowadays are realising they have a right to a strip of land and to grow their own food. It's a wonderful thing. I mean, it was a politically active movement, the allotmenteers. You know, because anciently, you know, people, you know, had, oh, God, my memory, this is what I do. You know, but piecemeal farming, we learnt about it in school. You'd each get given a strip of land, even if the land was all owned by the, you know, the baron or whatever. You had a right to grow crops. And it was hard won and hard fought for to maintain that. And in recent years, people have started to actually say to their councils, no, we still have a right to grow our own food. And I think increasingly we sort of want to, because we don't want things flown from all over the world. We don't want stuff that's, you know, had chemicals on it. We are aware that pesticides are absolutely destroying the bee population and therefore everyone's means of pollinating crops. You know, it's an act of rebellion to demand your right to grow.
Yeah. Well, it's quite, and there's a sort of, I suppose it does flow from, well, one of the most militant movements in all history in this country, I'm sure in lots of other countries, was the right to common land, wasn't it? Yeah. And when the enclosures happened over a period of 200 or 300 years.
Exactly.
That was sort of, in a way, that was a long version of, say, what Stalin did in Russia, forcing people into collective farms over a period of 20 years. Over here, it happened over a period of 200 years that people were forced off the common land. And then there was the right to ramble, you know, in the early 1900s. Massive, massive campaigns, and landowners would fire on the ramblers, wouldn't they?
Exactly. You know, the right, you know, that right to enjoy the countryside, whether it be to grow, you know, crops for your family, or just to walk in the hills that are outside your industrial town. You know, when you spend all week in a mill, you know, the right to actually head out and get some fresh air into your lungs. I mean, and I think people have always recognised the power of it and the fact that we have a right to it. And I find it quite moving, actually, that desire for people to maintain a connection to the earth.
Yeah. No, completely, completely. No, I think it's a beautiful thing. I don't think it's a thing to be dismissed at all. I just wish I was more competent with it.
Well, you know, from little acorns, you know,
exactly,
great oaks grow, and you should, by the end of today, you could have something growing on your windowsill, just like Jeremy Corbyn.
By the end of today?
Well, yeah, because...
Is it because I'm too impatient? Because I'd put a seed there on a bit of blotting paper, I'd go and make a cup of tea, I'd do a couple of answer an email, and then I'd think, oh, I wonder if I've got a cabbage yet.
Yeah. That is,
and then I'll go back.
Yeah, that is part of me. I do stand over seed trays screaming, come on, come on. You know, that is who I am. But actually, it's taught me that with some things, you only have to wait about 4 days. I mean, even little children can bear it. Yeah, honestly, if you plant, do you know microgreens? Do you know what I mean by that? You know, if you go to a posh restaurant and they put microgreens on your food, it's like a tiny it's basically the first cutting of something like either coriander or basil or one of those things.
They're
full of vitamins. I mean, this is what I'm saying. It would be good for you to grow them, actually. Just sprinkle it on some soil, and you do have to wait a couple of days. Not very long. It really isn't. And
I'm going to do it.
Yeah, and then you trim them off, and they are full of vitamins, and they're strong flavors, really strong flavors, and they're so good for you. So I think even if you could bear, I mean, you do go and shout at them, because I do. I scream at everything when I put it in. Somebody said, I mean, it's like, where are you? I put you in yesterday. Can't I, you know? But actually, they do eventually, they show up quite quickly. Some, particularly lettuces, anything in the lettuce family, Lola Rosso, any of those things, will grow quite fast. And you can start snipping them once they're about whatever length of your finger. You can start snipping the tops off and sprinkling them on your food. Or cress, you know, old school cress in an egg sandwich, yeah. And you get the, you know, there's so much joy to be had from planting it. It's interesting, it's fun, it takes moments, but it's lovely. Putting it on a windowsill, keeping it damp if you can remember, and you only need to water it once every couple of days. It's not like you have to kind of, you know,
right.
And then they come up in a couple of days and you've grown it and you eat it, and it could be the beginning of a lifelong love affair with horticulture. I really believe it.
I am won over partly by your words, but also partly by the passion.
Oh.
In equal measure.
Yeah.
And I would very, it's been lovely. Joe, this is the longest chat I've ever done on this podcast.
Oh.
Usually 15 minutes. And I'm sort of thinking, fucking hell, they're going on a bit, aren't they? But. Yeah. I know the Tories are terrible, but you don't need to fucking go on about it. But today.
I am passionate about it, and I genuinely think we could all have a go at it. That's the only thing I'd say. And I think the link then to the whole thing is joyful. That's what I'd say.
Caroline, one last question. So the name of the book again?
Is that the last question?
Mm.
Oh, it's called Drawn to
It the comes in two parts. What's the name of the book, and then what's the best way to buy the book?
Get it. Oh, I'm glad you gave me a bit of a heads up, because I'm not very good at that. So it's called Drawn to the Garden. It's published by Quarto. You can get it in lots of different ways. Oh, I should know this. Oh.
Oh, I love this.
Selling things, no.
I love this. This is why in America now, American go, right, it's just an amazing book, and it's already, it's up for 23 different awards, and all that. And you can buy it here.
You can get it. You can get it. This is something I really should know this.
If you put Drawn to the Garden, Caroline.
Yes, Waterstones. You can get it from Waterstones bookshop. You can get it from there. You can get it on Amazon from Waterstones. You can click on my, Instagram account, which seems gardens. There you are. Any of those ways. Or you can come around my house and I'll sell you a copy at the door.
Fantastic. Do that. Thank you so much. I know what the fuck is going on, at least in one area of the world, which is lettuce. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you've liked it, rate it, and if you can be bothered, write a review. If there is anything at all that you think I should be finding out what the fuck is going on with it, please send me a message on Twitter at WTFisGoingOnPod, at WTFisGoingOnPod, and we will look at every message that you send. If you would like to become a WTF supporter for as little as £2 a month and get early access to ad-free and extended versions, please visit our Patreon page. What the Fuck Is Going On? Was hosted by me, Mark Steele, with my guests, Caroline Quentin. It was written by Mark Steele and Pete Sinclair. The music was by Willie Dowling. It was produced by Mike Benwell at Carousel Studios. What the Fuck Is Going On? Was brought to you by WTF Productions.